Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, May 29th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Eureka Council approves Bicycle Boulevard in split vote. Planned Parenthood decries Newsom's budget cuts as devastating. And Firebreak plays key role in containing early May wildfire. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Issues of community engagement are being raised as Eureka implements a bicycle master plan with a new project. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
With City Council approval of a $2.2 million construction project, Eureka's C Street will be turned into a bicycle boulevard with reduced vehicle traffic. Funded through a state active transportation program grant, the bid award was approved at a May 27th City Council special meeting, but the vote was close, as two council members have concerns about the project's level of public engagement. The Eureka-based RAO Construction Company will build the boulevard, including installation of median islands at offset intersections, street planters, and green bike lane street painting, as seen on H&I streets. Another notable feature is converting one-block segments of C Street from two-way to one-way traffic. It's one of several traffic reduction mechanisms included in the project. But there's concern about whether residents of C Street neighborhoods have gotten enough heads up about it. During a public comment period, C Street resident Jessica Rebholz said neighborhood outreach has been inadequate. She has other concerns as well.
Additionally, I'd like to better understand the logic behind selecting C Street. He mentioned that there was lights and that it's a slower traffic. B Street already has lights, flashing lights on Boone. Why not pick B Street? Why C Street? It makes no sense to me. What exactly are we trying to direct people from? I heard from Old Town to Henderson Center. Again, if you're trying to find the distance between H&I, then again, go to Union. Go down more. Why so close? So as someone who lives on the street, I would love to see something come to us, brought to us. The people, I can guarantee you, no one on C Street actually knows this is happening. So it's being tucked away. And you guys are preaching transparency. This is the way you provide transparency. Let us know what's happening on our streets.
Bicycle-friendly planning has been afoot in Eureka for several years, with the C Street project one of many included in a bicycle master plan. City engineer Jesse Willer said the goal of the project is to discourage drivers from using C Street as a cut-through street to get from one side of town to another, while allowing bicyclists to be able to get across town without having to navigate as much traffic. Speaking during public comment, Brett Gronemeyer said that will benefit both bicyclists and neighborhood residents.
You know, it's good to have a good mixture of different bike facilities in the city, because not everybody is confident when they're riding and they want to ride with a lot of traffic. And this would create a nice quiet corridor for cyclists. And I think the residents would also, you know, appreciate the having less traffic and less vehicles speeding down their street that this project will bring with the volume management and speed management features it's going to contain. And I think a lot of people talk about, you know, Eureka and why, you know, young people and families don't stay here. And I think this is the kind of facility that will help make Eureka more attractive to families and young people who want to make this their home.
Level of outreach concerned council members Renee Contreras-Deloche and Mario Fernandez. Contreras-Deloche lives near C Street and said older neighborhood residents would have benefited from being informed of the project through mail. Fernandez said he supports the project but made a motion to bump the bid award decision to June 17th to allow time for public outreach. The motion didn't get a second. Councilmember Leslie Castellano's motion to approve the bid award did. She noted that council approved the project after a number of community meetings.
This really is for awarding construction to a process that we've already approved on council. And so this isn't about whether or not to have a C Street Bicycle Boulevard. This is about, like, who's going to build it. And this is grant funded. And I think just delaying the process will only bog down government process to something that we've all been in agreement with for now years. So just to say, I would like to see this move forward expeditiously versus delay something that has had many, many, many people, bicyclists, non-bicyclists, residents, all commenting on.
The bid award was approved in a 3-2 vote, with Contreras Deloach and Fernandez voting against. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
An occupant was trapped in an overturned vehicle following a serious crash on Highway 101 in Arcata. KMUD's Jordan Pangelinan reports.
On May 29, 2025, Arcata Fire Department responded to an injury traffic accident on Highway 101 near School Road last night. It involved a vehicle overturned in the grass with a trapped occupant. The incident dispatched at 9:30 p.m., requiring a multi-agency extraction effort due to the complexity of the entrapment. Arcata Fire initially dispatched two engines and a duty officer. Upon receiving information from California Highway Patrol that a victim was trapped, additional resources were immediately requested. This brought in a third Arcata Fire Station, Blue Lake Fire Department, Field Brook Volunteer Fire Department, and Cal Fire Trinidad, each contributing an engine to the scene. The first Arcata engine arrived to find the vehicle on its side, pinned against a tree just south of the School Road off-ramp, with one person trapped inside. All three Arcata engines worked to stabilize the vehicle and meticulously cut it away from both the tree and the victim. Blue Lake Fire and Cal Fire personnel assisted significantly with the extraction. The rescue proved to be highly technical, as the victim was severely pinned by the tree resting against the vehicle. After a challenging operation, the victim was successfully extracted and transported to the hospital by Arcata Mad River Ambulance. Arcata Fire Department extends its sincere gratitude to its mutual aid partners, Blue Lake Fire Department, Field Brook Volunteer Fire Department, and Cal Fire, for their swift response and critical assistance in this complex incident. Thank you for listening. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD.
Reproductive rights and access to care have long been hallmarks of California's progressive healthcare system. But now, advocates say the very policies once seen as a national model are under threat, not from federal rollbacks, but from California's own leadership, stemming from budget cuts proposed by Governor Gavin Newsom. Planned Parenthood says it would slash their state funding by a third, effectively defunding them at the state level. In a strongly worded statement, the Planned Parenthood Affiliates of California, representing 7 statewide regions and 17 health centers, expressed outrage. They wrote, quote, "As the state's leading reproductive health care provider, we are outraged by the devastating cuts proposed in Governor Newsom's May revise to critical family planning and abortion investments," close quote. KMUD News previously spoke with Christian Garcia, a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood Northern California, the affiliate representing our region from the Bay Area to the Oregon border. That conversation, which took place late last year, focused on rising national threats to reproductive access, including Project 2025. At the time, Garcia emphasized the importance of allies in Sacramento, including Governor Newsom, in holding the line on reproductive rights.
Having Gavin Newsom at the table allows us to figure out what are creative solutions that we can find here as a state to continue to be that place that people can come to.
But in the months since that interview, Planned Parenthood's tone towards the governor has shifted sharply. as the governor intends to slash the organization's budget by a third amidst federal plans to defund nationwide, calling the May budget revision a direct blow to California's reproductive health care infrastructure. But advocates, including Southern Humboldt resident and Planned Parenthood NorCal board member Carolyn Hino Barraza, aren't accepting the cuts as the new law of the land. Instead, they are actively meeting with lawmakers, working to ensure the voices of healthcare workers and patients are heard at a time when access and protection are critically needed.
Yes, we met with Mike McGuire and also Chris Rogers, who is our assembly member for this area. And it is especially important now because there are so many threats to our reimbursement on the federal government level. So, and we also are concerned about abortion rights in general and access to medication abortion in particular. As you know, they're trying to attack us in every way possible. And we have to do everything that we can to make sure that our services are still there for Californians.
Although Planned Parenthood does not turn away patients based on income and continues to provide care to all who seek it, that doesn't mean these services come without cost. According to the organization's website, all in-clinic abortion, a birth control implant, or even a single dose of life-saving HIV medication can each cost around $1,000. That's why PP board member Hino Barraza says she met with state legislators to ensure that these essential services remain available to all, regardless of race, gender, or income.
Yes, well, Lauren, because we never turn any patient away, we have to subsidize those services in through our donation base. And PP NorCal has a very robust fundraising arm. As I said, the reimbursements are lacking. That's one of the bills that we're supporting and hoping gets passed this year. We'll make sure that the reimbursement for sexually transmitted infections stays at 100%. A lot of Medi-Cal services are being looked at through Medicaid and the federal government, and we are anticipating some loss of reimbursement. But we are hoping that California will find a way in their budget to make up for the federal government losses that we expect.
While Gavin Newsom is currently signaling otherwise, the use of state health funds will likely be a centerpiece as the state legislature negotiates a budget deal over the next month, with the final budget due on June 15th.
By contacting your local state senator and your assembly person to make sure that they keep reproductive health care access available to all Californians, no matter where their economic background falls. Locally, as you know, as we both know, the cannabis industry has taken large, large hits. And many of those folks are losing their jobs and their health care insurance. So here locally, we, as I said earlier, we never turn anyone away. And we do provide a lot of really needed services, not just abortion, but the sexually transmitted infection testing, cancer screening, birth control. All of those things are important, but they cost money.
Last month in April, 260 donors generously met PP NorCal's fundraising goal during their annual Fearless Dinner and live auction. The event was not publicly advertised due to concerns about potential retaliation, underscoring the heightened risks the organization faces as it stands on the front lines of what advocates describe as a wave of liberal backsliding. Hino Barraza says that rollback isn't limited to other parts of the country. It's happening right here in Humboldt County. She expressed both outrage and heartbreak over the case of a local woman who was denied life-saving reproductive health care.
Last year, had a member of this county go to a hospital in Eureka and was turned away. She was experiencing a miscarriage and she needed life-saving treatment and surgery. And she was told to go to another hospital who would service her because it went against their religious beliefs. They gave her a bucket and some towels. And that happened right here in Humboldt County. So even though we live in a state where abortion is legal, we still have we are so fragile. This woman was fortunate enough to make it to Mad River in time to save her life. But women in these vulnerable areas where a religious hospital is one of the very few options available to them are facing life-threatening experiences. And we can't let that happen. So even though, as I keep saying, we live in California where abortion is supposed to be safe and legal, there are many, many cases that fall through the cracks. And so as time goes on and these cases become more common, more and more of us will feel the impact of it.
Hino Barasa is referring to the case of Eureka resident Anna Nuslock, who alleges she was denied an emergency abortion care by St. Joseph Hospital, the only hospital birthing center that remains in Humboldt County. Nuslock experienced a life-threatening miscarriage at 15 weeks pregnant with twins. According to her complaint, hospital staff at St. Joseph allegedly refused to provide treatment, delaying care during a critical emergency. California Attorney General Rob Bonta has since filed a lawsuit against St. Joseph Hospital, asserting that the facility violated state law by denying emergency abortion care. St. Joseph's parent company, Providence, denies the allegations and argues that its actions are protected under constitutionally guaranteed religious freedoms. Earlier this month, Humboldt County Superior Court Judge Timothy Canning rejected Providence's attempt to dismiss the state's case. Meanwhile, Nuslock's separate civil suit, filed with support from the National Women's Law Center, remains ongoing and seeks monetary damages for the harm she suffered. Hino Barasa says this is yet another reminder of why protecting reproductive health care remains critical, even in a state where many have taken such services for granted. She is urging community members to contact their representatives, who will have a say in the upcoming state budget revisions, and to support local reproductive health organizations if they are able.
There's a big donate button. If you just Google Planned Parenthood of Northern California, it will come up. And every donation, every dollar, we have people that donate $5 a month. That adds up to a lot of money. And, right now, as I said, with so many more patients not having adequate health insurance, the need is really, really great. Abortion has never been reimbursed properly in our state. There is reimbursement, but it doesn't reimburse us for our full costs. So all those shortfalls have to be managed appropriately. We are dedicated to our patients. We don't want to close any health centers if we don't have to. But, we are in for a very scary ride. As you know, we're only a couple months into our current president's term, and we have a long haul and we need to sustain these services.
Planned Parenthood is also working to pass other bills in the state legislature that protect the privacy of trans patients seeking gender-affirming care. KMA News will continue to share updates as critical decisions are made mid-June. To learn more, you can visit PlannedParenthoodAction.org. Turning to Mendocino, when a fast-moving fire broke out near Pine Mountain in Willits on May 6, it could have spread quickly, but it didn't, thanks to a maintained fire break and the swift action of neighbors and firefighters. Sarah Reith reports.
Last fall, neighbors working with the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council pitched in to help a landowner maintain a strategic fuel break that did exactly what it was supposed to do: provide an opportunity to safely stop a wildfire from getting into the larger community. The 5-acre ridge fire broke out at the top of Pine Mountain, 8 miles outside of Willits, on the afternoon of May 6th. No structures were damaged and no injuries were reported, though the fire expanded rapidly and the whole incident was a close call. It didn't get widespread attention precisely because, thanks to that fire break, it was not much of an event. That's exactly what the Fire Safe Council strives for, creating conditions where newsworthy events are not fire-related. That wasn't the case in 2017 when the Redwood Complex fire was visible from the Pine Mountain ridgeline. Tom Varney was among the residents who fled before wind-driven flames. When he got back, he saw that CAL FIRE had cut a line through the forest bordering the meadow behind his house down a steep hillside almost to the Willits end of Tom Kai Road. That work was part of a 500-acre-plus CAL FIRE treatment. At the time, he was not pleased. The firefighters' bulldozers had pushed down hundreds of trees, which then had to be cleaned up. Still, he explained,
the fire wasn't close in 2017, several miles away, but this was the most strategic place we could try to do a auxiliary fire break if the wind should have shifted and the fire started coming north. This would have been our place that we would have made a stand to try to keep it from heading down into Willits.
Over the next 7 years, he picked away at the mountain of foliage. On September 20th of 2024, a Mendocino County Fire Safe Council work party brought neighbors from all over the area to give the effort another big push before fire season began. The work parties are a Measure P-funded program that allows the Fire Safe Council to augment volunteer efforts with a 5-person paid work crew, chipper, and tools, all at no direct cost to the beneficiaries. Fire Safe Council employees also help to organize the event and offer tips about how to promote fire safety. An important feature of the community work parties is that their location is determined using very local knowledge of what the greatest risks to the community are. They can focus on vulnerabilities that large-scale projects might miss. The day of the work party at Varney's homestead, Angie Herman took a break from her uphill climb with the chainsaw she'd been using to limb up the trees to extol the work her neighbor had done to maintain fire resiliency on his property.
It's amazing how much he has done, so we really want to support that. And the fact that this was like a fire break, we may as well maintain it. You know, it's here already. So that's kind of what we're doing. We're just cleaning up what's grown back and helping him clean up some of the stuff that he just couldn't get to.
And is this a fire break? And it looks like a road because fire breaks look like roads. Yeah. Is this a safety feature for more of the community or the mountain at large?
Yes, definitely helps. Anywhere we can get a break in the vegetation, it all helps. It'll slow things down. It'll provide access. It's definitely going to help. I mean, I'd like to see a few more of these.
CAL FIRE agrees. Shane Lamkin, CAL FIRE Mendocino Unit Public Information Officer, relayed that the maintenance and regular vegetation removal on the site, the kind of work they would like to see landowners performing regularly, created a safe space for their crew to work from and contain the fire. When the ridge fire broke out on May 6th, it moved fast. Varney was outside getting some work done in the early afternoon when he saw flames moving across the green grass on the slope.
I was down there trying to put it out with a shovel, and very smoky, very traumatic, and I was working on it for a while, and then my leg was getting hot, and I looked at my foot, and my pant leg was on fire, and that kind of freaked me out a little bit, and I got that out. And then I realized that the fire was not, it was headed for some much drier grass.
He called the fire department and got three, the Little Lake Fire Protection District, the Brook Trails Fire Department, and CAL FIRE, which stopped the fire at 5 acres in under an hour. Randy McDonald, another neighbor who's always fire ready, shared his recollections.
If it would have jumped the area where we did the Fire Safe Council cleanup and that fire break, it would have went down the hill, and I don't think they would have put it out for hours.
While Varney was fighting the flames in the grassland, McDonald was dousing them closer to his neighbor's house with water from his own 400-gallon water tank.
I need a bigger one. I got a 3/4-ton Chevy pickup with a 400-gallon tank in it, and I mainly use it to water my roads to keep the dust down in the summer. And I did put all the fire attachment stuff to it. I got 400 foot of a hose. I have different nozzles. I have a quick fill at my house for refilling it. I've had to use it two different times, this one and another time before, actually three times, to be honest with you, another time before that. And, you know, it's been a lifesaver.
Varney believes that without the firebreak, the flames could have easily torn into the woods, where the terrain is not easily accessible and landowners have installed locked gates across narrow, treacherous roads. He says the early season fire made him realize how much of a help the neighborhood work party was, both in helping with physical safety and creating a sense of community.
One person came all the way from Brook Trails and participated. I was quite amazed at that. And then some people that were further towards town down on the pavement came. So I met some people that I didn't know, and they were willing to go to somebody's property and help with the fire defense. Neighborhood people that realized we're all in the same boat.
McDonald commended his neighbor, saying,
"This guy takes great care of his property."
But as the wind picked up and pushed embering tan oak leaves ahead of the main fire, he thought back to 2017. It was a time before well-organized work parties with organizational backing had become as fashionable as they are today, when things got out of hand with disastrous results.
When you got fire and you got wind, you got troubles. They all start small, and then they get bigger.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council podcast. For more information about how you can get help with a community work party in your neighborhood or other ways to promote fire safety, visit firesafemendocino.org.
In state news, rally at San Francisco Immigration Court condemns ICE. Kennedy Cuello reports.
When immigrant rights are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
And when we fight,
immigrant rights advocates rallied outside of San Francisco Immigration Court Wednesday. This rally was part of a simultaneous event in which a rally also happened in Sacramento and in Concord. They are a response to ICE presence at immigration courts, which resulted in the arrest of four people in San Francisco Tuesday. Speaker Sanika Mahajan, the Director of Community Engagement and Organizing with Mission Action, demands an end to collaboration between the courts and ICE. She says the arrests Tuesday are an example of the federal government stripping the rights of people.
That's really, you know, an example of this disgusting erasure of due process. People are showing up to their court hearings for asylum as they're meant to do, and they know that there's risks to not showing up, and yet when their cases get dismissed and there's ICE just waiting to detain them, they know that that's an undermining of the ability to seek asylum and due process. And so we're calling on judges also to not give in to the intimidation to dismiss cases.
Lisa Knox, co-executive director for California Collaborative for Immigrant Justice, explains how these arrests are taking place. She says that the collaboration between ICE and the courts involves government attorneys moving to have cases dismissed in order to fast-track their deportations. Knox says that today shows the power that the people have, since no ICE agents came to the courthouses.
There's no ICE here today, right? ICE is not in the court in San Francisco or in Concord, as far as we know today, making arrests. Again, I think people power has something to do with that. Also, I will say that in many of the cases in Concord and San Francisco, ICE has not been successful in getting the judges to dismiss cases. So people will still have their day in court and still have the opportunity to fight.
Mahajan urged the community to rally together to fight for immigrant communities, whether through joining rallies or volunteering to be a court witness. Knox says that it is important to stay informed and to talk to local organizations to know the rights you are entitled to.
There's a coordinated campaign, right, of misinformation aimed at immigrants, that's been happening from the Trump administration. And more importantly, there's a coordinated campaign against immigrant communities, right? Encouraging people to self-deport, trying to fast-track deportations, right? And instill fear in the community. And so this, the recent arrests that have happened at immigration courts are part and parcel of that, right? So we want to build power, not panic. We're here to tell the community, despite the Trump administration's misinformation, you still have rights.
Speakers shared resources, helplines, and passed out red Know Your Rights cards describing the rights one has in an encounter with an immigration officer. The activists are vowing to continue to fight for immigrant communities and demand courts not collaborate with ICE. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@KMUD.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.